Homeschooling, prior to the pandemic, was seen as eccentric, but now has become a competitive option for parents in regards to the education of their children. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are going to look at the growing numbers around the world who are choosing homeschool versus the traditional classroom, and what this means for the future of education. Let's get started. Over the last 3 years, Forbes reports that more than 300 million children worldwide partook in some form of homeschooling. Now, the concept of homeschooling is nothing new, as it has been practiced since the 17th century, when North America became settled and colonized. At that time, educational infrastructure was not the priority. Therefore, if parents wanted their children to be literate, the responsibility fell on those within the home. Since then, however, homeschooling has grown to not just be an American phenomenon, but with technological developments like the internet, the perks of at-home teaching have really caught fire. Countries like Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the UK now boast numbers as high as those found in the United States. So what is it about homeschooling which is gaining in popularity, and could this be seen as a rebellion from government indoctrination? Well, let's ask the expert. Stephen Rummelsberg holds a degree in history from the University of California, Santa Barbara. A school teacher, he's also a writer and speaker on matters of faith, culture, and education. Now, Mr. Rummelsberger is a member of the Teacher Advisory Board and a homeschooling analyst. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen.
Thank you, Scotty. It's good to be here.
So how has the perception of homeschooling changed in the last 5 years?
I think it's changed quite a bit in the last 5 years, but particularly in the last couple years as a result of the pandemic. Originally, I think for the last several generations, homeschooling had been sort of propagandized against in the sense that the teachers' unions and schools and government officials want the children in the school for the very purposes of indoctrination. And so there was a lot of talk of homeschooling kids being weird or being not socialized. And so there was a pretty heavy stigma. And then, as we'll talk about, the pandemic comes along, everyone has to stay home, and the agenda in the public school is exposed to parents through online teaching. So in a real sense, the agenda backfired and I think overexposed itself. And now homeschooling is perceived as a much more viable opportunity, not just because of technology, but it's even less stigmatized now.
Which is amazing. So can you give all of this credit, do you think, to the pandemic? And why did it take something so drastic to make parents aware of what is going on in the classroom?
That's a really good question. I don't give all the credit to the pandemic, but the pandemic, we saw a huge boom. For example, in 1999, there were about 850,000 homeschoolers. That's a lot. But by 2016, that number more than doubled to 1.6 million homeschoolers. And so as you see, that increase in homeschooling is obviously a reaction of concerned parents not wanting their children indoctrinated by the public schools. And we're going to talk about more about that in a minute. But now we see in 2023, and as a direct result of the pandemic, this huge jump to 3.7 million. That's almost 7% of the entire student population is now being homeschooled.
That's incredible. So speaking of that, you know, in some of the writings, as I was looking for in researching the shows and some of the things in your work, you actually said you believe that modern education is intellectually and morally bankrupt. How so? And what does this say about the current education options, both public and private, for primary age students?
Yeah, that's quite a complicated question, but very, very much worth asking and answering. We may not have enough time here to fully go into it, but I want to make a
suggestion. Oh, we've got plenty of time. Don't worry about that. Just we got all the time in the world.
Oh, okay, good. Well, this is really a big question. I'm going to try to make it simple, though. We should think of it this way. There are really only two possible ways to look at an education. Either we get it right or we get it wrong. And in fact, there's two camps we can look at to discover the right and wrong kind of education. The confusing thing, though, is that the camp that gets it wrong has millions of variations. So it looks like there's millions of options, but there really aren't. So I want to put it this way. If we think of love, the highest virtue, the things that we truly love, now I'm not talking about the passion love or the lust or attraction or anything like that. I'm talking about truly love. There's a great saint, Saint Augustine, who explains there are two loves, and out of these loves come two cities. And I'm going to adapt this to the school because there are those that love the truth so much that they even might have contempt for their own opinions. Conversely, there are those who love their own opinions so much that they have contempt for the truth. If we're talking about education, we can call these two camps the camp of the philosophers who get education right, and then the camp of the sophists who get education wrong because they love their own opinions so much that they ignore the truth. So that's the way that works. If we ask a philosopher what an education is, it will be mutually exclusive from and diametrically opposed to what the sophist would tell us about an education. So I'm trying to make this simple. A philosopher would say this: a man is a composite of body and soul. And that soul is the substantial form of the human person that has this playing field of potential activities we call powers. Man has appetites, irascible concupiscible appetites. He has material knowing senses. He has an intellect and a free will. And we call the free will an intellectual appetite. The sophists, on the other hand, define man in a very, very different way. And they actually, at best, refer to man as a trousered ape or an evolved animal. And they might give him credit for all the knowing senses and the appetites and the passions, but they don't give man credit for the intellect and even for free will. So the modern sophist and the image of the school since at least even before John Dewey 100 years ago has been that man doesn't have an intellect. He doesn't have a free will. In fact, man doesn't even have a soul. This entire endeavor is grounded in material determinism, genetic and environmental. So that's diametrically opposed from the philosopher. And in fact, the modern school run by the sophists doesn't even deal with the intellect or free will. They exclude notions of virtue and vice. So they reject objective truth, which is intellectual, and they reject the moral good, which is moral. So I make the claim properly that the sophists' form of education is immoral, it's anti-human, it's anti-intellectual.
Very interesting. I really do appreciate you going into such great lengths of explaining that, because a lot of times people just think it's just a simple thing as like teacher, student, and they get their curriculum and it's just simple like that. But there's actually a lot more complexity that goes to behind the scenes of that, which brings me to my next question for you, because you talk about outcome-based education. And let me just say outcome-based education, especially with the public schools presently, can be very debatable because there's a wide range of what we're getting. And it's not always what you see in the grades. What is the result of this being the standard of education? And it's not only currently, but for generations.
Yeah, outcomes-based education is an artifact of what started with John Dewey, who's the father of American education, who was formed by the Prussian schools even before the 20th century began. So it's an artifact of materialism and scientism. And you see, it's from the school of the sophists, where they believe there's nothing outside or beyond the material realities. They assume that students in schools are meant to be agents of social change and to be used to solve social problems. They have good intentions, but this is terribly misguided if you discover what an authentic education is. So outcomes-based education supposes, looks at society and determines what they think people need to know to be good citizens in terms of working and producing and contributing to the, really, the economic well-being of the state. And they make that list of things, and then they plan backwards and teach to those specific skills or things. So the opposite is done by the philosophers. They begin with principles of truth, and they don't aim at the kinds of outcomes. In fact, all the outcomes in modern education are actually just means to the true ends in an authentic education, which is the cultivation of the human soul, aiming at wisdom through the liberal arts, philosophy and theology, to cultivate the virtues, the intellectual and moral virtues. Those are unconsidered in outcomes-based education. So I hope that makes sense.
It absolutely does. But where does sort of, you talk about obviously about the philosophy and everything that goes behind it, the actual education, but where does this actually go into life application of skills? What about the things that's just as simple as teaching them how to balance checkbooks? Those seem to be obsolete right now. I hate to say even cooking or just general things that it takes to function as a human being in today's society doesn't actually exist.
No, quite right. We have to get back and ask the question, what is an education? An education is not about balancing checkbooks or cooking or doing things like that, even though those are very important things to do. In fact, if you look at the liberal arts, which are the true components of authentic education, you'll discover there's language component, which is the trivium, and there's quantifiable components called the quadrivium, which includes arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. To be cultivated in these arts of language and of quantification prepares a soul beautifully to balance a checkbook, cook a meal, interact in society, to be an excellent citizen. Those things that the schools make big become very small in an authentic education. So it's in authentic education, it's not about skills. It's actually about acquiring the arts and sciences such that the interior life can be cultivated and a human soul can be perfected as they were made according to nature.
Well, we can get into whether that's an unrealistic expectation to do across the board for all students, because I do want to talk about homeschooling, which is something that I think does give that opportunity to have a balance of both, where you can learn both life skills and the education that is needed. So let's first look at this globally. Do other countries homeschool? I've mentioned a few. If so, where have you really seen this taken off? And how do other countries look at this trend to homeschooling as what's happening in the United States?
Yeah, there is a trend all over the world because of, as you mentioned, technology. You can do all kinds of things with schooling through technology, through Zoom and through these things. And that's really, really important to understand. But there's a danger in that. The authentic homeschooling is in the home under the tutelage of the first teachers, which are parents. When we give external authority to other entities, that's where we have to be really careful. I think the governments that do not like homeschooling don't mind the technology that extends their reach into the home. So I'd want to be really careful here about how we calibrate or qualify or understand what homeschooling is. If you are piping the government education into your home through Zoom and you're having your schooling at home, that's not what we would call homeschooling. That's government education in the location of the home. So we got to be really careful about it. But it is booming. It's growing. And it's also, even in a place like China where it's illegal, you see this growing movement of homeschooling because parents want to protect their children from the indoctrination of the state.
So you're right. There are two different ways of looking at homeschooling versus the one that the parents are led or one that the government still continues. It just happens at the home. The American, what do you think is the majority of Americans choose as their lifestyle right now when they're looking at homeschooling? And is that what will serve as a model for other countries to follow?
That's a great question, because I think in America, what we see is that we are in a real sense the freest. We are the freest to do homeschooling, and I think it's a great model because we're taking the idea of homeschooling is to protect children from the agenda of the government led by the sophists, and that's nearly every school in America, unfortunately. So what you see is parents protecting their children can take several forms in America. We can send our kids to classical charter schools. I work at a school called John Adams Academy in Northern California, and it's fantastic. It's a great alternative. There's a hybrid homeschooling group called Regina Celli Academy, and that's where you go 2 days a week with faithful, good people, and then you spend 3 days a week at home. And then there's Tim and Steph Gordon are doing Retrograde Academy, which is a way of helping parents homeschool their children properly. And then there's something like Colby Academy. We have many options. And I think this idea of authentic homeschooling, protecting our children from the innocence-destroying agenda of the state, really is what is a beacon of hope for the world if we don't get crushed. Because the government, as we speak, is trying to get into this here.
Thank you, Stephen. Okay, I want him to stick around because this is a great opportunity to take a break. Because when we come back, I want to ask Stephen how the government is responding to those choosing not to be educated in the classroom. We'll be right back.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
For months, we've been told Kyiv is preparing a counteroffensive to regain lost territory and that Ukraine will eventually become a member of NATO. But recently, we're told to curb any expectations the Ukraine assault will achieve anything. Then, what is the point of the counteroffensive?
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously. Why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
We are back and continuing our conversation with Steven Rummelsberg, who holds a degree in history from the University of California, Santa Barbara, a school teacher. He's also a writer and a speaker on matters of faith, culture, and education. Now, Mr. Rummelsberger is a member of the Teacher Advisory Board and a homeschooling analysis. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so back to our conversation. Do you see this growing popularity as a rebellion from the lack of substance which is being taught students or the curriculum which is being taught students?
Yes, it is a rebellion for sure, and a rightful one. From the pandemic, when things were piped into the home, I remember there was a movement from teachers to ask parents not to look at what was going on, as if this was a private conversation between teachers and their children. And the reason they did that is because the agenda is actually diabolical. So what happened is, I think parents from the beginning, even back 20, 30 years ago, took their kids out of the schools because they saw the agenda. But society has made it so difficult for one parent to stay home that it seems like going to school is one of our only options for our children. And even so, that's breaking down as a direct rebellion to the lack of substance that parents are seeing. And worse than that, to the agenda that they're seeing brought home in terms of ideology. Our children are no longer being educated. They're being made into political activists.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because governments definitely do not like rebellions. So how are governments around the world fully accepting of parents picking a curriculum for their children's education?
I don't think they're accepting at all. But there was this movement in the public schools with leadership to bring teachers three or four different options of textbooks. And then they would get the teacher to choose one of them. And then if there were any complaints, they could say, well, you chose it. So I believe that the government is trying to have a hand in influencing these certain curricula so that people choose something that mimics in the home what's happening in the government school. And that would be the biggest mistake you could make in homeschooling. So no, I don't think the governments are happy about it at all. I know that the NEA, the teachers associations, and schools in general don't like it, because they feel like the homeschoolers are taking money from them. So that's just part of the equation.
Absolutely. Even though those students are not taking, they're actually giving back the tax dollars, because you still have to pay if your child's a taxpayer here in the United States. But I think that's it also speaks to a larger picture, because the growth of homeschooling, how do you feel that it, what does it say about the current education options, not only public, but private for primary age students? And where do you think these charter schools fit into this picture?
Yeah, there are a lot of options now. And unfortunately, most of the public or most of the private schools mimic the public schools. And also, unfortunately, many of the charter schools, because they're connected to government money, they have to mimic what the the national agenda is. So that becomes problematic and tricky. But I still think there's a group of schools, classical charter schools, that have something in their charter that says we will not use textbooks. We will not do the sex ed program. These exist. My school, John Adams Academy, is like that. And I think those, oh, and the waiting list is huge, I must say. So I think those are possible. You have to seek those out as parents. I would urge parents to protect their children's innocence and their virtue from what the government's been trying to do for a few generations now. Right now, it's gotten extremely radicalized. So it's very obvious and people are noticing it. So the more people get out of the public schools, the better it is for the health of the family. And the family is the building block of civilization.
But I'm still scratching my head because the fact you do see this major opposition from state and federal institutions largely opposed to homeschooling. Now, they won't come right out and say it, but obviously the multiple lawsuits that continue to happen and homeschoolers are winning. Why are the federal government threatened by homeschoolers, and why would they be this way?
Well, if it's understood that it is a political agenda that they're inculcating and that their political future depends on making little activists out of our children, and if you understand that they purposefully separate children from the families in terms of family values, then you can see that the state wants to consume our children as fodder for the big economic machine. And so it makes sense. The state wants to preserve itself. The state wants to grow. The state wants to dominate. It's a link in the chain in globalism. And that's what they're going for, because it's a materialistic, sophistical endeavor. They are terribly upset about it. And you've got to notice that they are reaching their tentacles into homeschooling endeavors. I think every state in the United States has a set of criteria that you have to satisfy to demonstrate that at least you're doing something that the government wants you to do.
Well, let's have it. You know, it's amazing because in the past, and you don't hear as much today, you hear a lot of people say things about how homeschooled children will turn out socially awkward. You know, is there any reason to believe that stereotype, especially when you said there's so many other options that go along with just being homeschooling? It's also includes other options during the week. What is your response to that in the present day with so much technology available and so many options?
Yeah, it was one of the original stigmatizations. They said, oh, homeschooling kids need to be socialized, and they're not. And they're weird and they're awkward. And there's a weird kind of appearance that might confirm that. If you look at how they've made automatons out of our children in the public schools, they are all in what I observe to be what I call an educational coma. These kids are qualitatively different when they are indoctrinated, when they are brainwashed, when they are taught the stock responses to ideological virtue signaling. These kids do appear very different from the homeschooling kids. But the inversion is this: when you meet homeschooled kids, they know how to look you in the eye. They know how to shake your hand. They know how to have a conversation, to be convivial, to be, I think, potentially much better citizens than what we're trying to produce in the homeschools. So I think it's optics and it's a farce, but you still have a lot of people believe that homeschooling kids are weird when in fact they're trying to make public school kids weird, and they're calling what's very normal and humane weird. So it gets complicated.
What time is more crucial, do you think, right now? Where are we seeing more of this indoctrination happening? When the kids in the younger age, the elementary school age, the middle school age, or the high school? What is more the priority? If parents had to pick off a time to make this a priority, where should they be?
Your priority should be never let your kids near the schools, especially when they're young, and then hold on to them through high school, and then don't let them go to a state college. That would be my priority.
Okay, I get that. As a mother myself of both my kids having to be in the public school, and we're looking at state schools for college on the side of it, a lot of parents would look and say, this would be wonderful in a great world when I didn't have to worry about paying for inflation and the inflated cost of everything right now. Yes, I would love to stay home with my children. How do you respond to those parents that go, I don't have time to be able to do that if I'm going to be able to keep a roof over their head and food on the table? Where do they find the time to do this?
Let me give a little more serious answer to the last question. If there's a priority, the priority is when they're young. And I know that's the contrary to what we want to hear. But it's super important to protect your children from when they're young, at least up and through, I would say, high school. If you send them to a public high school and you've done your due diligence to form them well, I can understand that, because here's the thing. There are only two mitigating factors to the damage the school can do. And one is a good family. And the second is virtue, the acquisition of the true virtue. So staying at home and educating them when they're young is of much more value than when they're older. But I know it looks like the opposite. I've heard parents say, well, it's safe when they're young, because what can they do? Well, they're starting in TK 2, 3, 4, and 5, and they are indoctrinating them with every bad ideology that exists, including sex ed.
You know what? You've just been a wealth of information today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Scotty.
Okay, that was homeschooling advocate and expert Stephen Rummelsberg. Very interesting on that. You know, when parents feel their local public education option is lacking in areas they want to be important, they seek viable options. Now, private education might be too expensive, a charter school might not be available, and teaching at home might be the only option which satisfies the parents' needs. As public schools become more indoctrinated by the woke agenda, the hallways continue to become less safe, and religious concerns, those are all three justifiable reasons for parents to look to homeschooling. Now, prior to the pandemic, the argument against homeschooling was it was a reduced curriculum, and missing socialization produced a less prepared student for college or beyond. However, the latest statistics actually show those home educated in America typically score 15 to 30 percentile points above public school standards on standardized tests. And that's also globally tracking to be the same levels. So with these overwhelming successful results, there is no wonder why the popularity of homeschooling is increasing. However, a mass exodus from the public education system is not a welcomed move for the government, who has in multiple cases invoked legislation to try and limit and restrict the curriculum, which can be used by homeschoolers, thus invoking the one institution which homeschoolers are trying to escape from all into their perimeters. Sadly, with the infrastructure already in place to support homeschooling within the government system, thanks to the pandemic, it would only take a small legislative tweak to make certain rules for the homeschooling program to be compulsory. A move which would give the government a forced seat at everyone's kitchen table. I'm Sky Nell Hughes, and this has been your 360 View. Thanks for watching.